Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, September 14th, 2014. This is episode 1118. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography. Digital photography. Chris Marquardt joins us at half past the next hour. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us from overseas. Just Skype us, you know, some sort of VoIP product, and you could you can get to us. And we'll talk high-tech. I meant to talk about it last show, and I didn't. I've been wearing the Moto 360 for the last few days. Actually, thanks to my colleague Jason Howell, I couldn't get one. They sold out faster than I could get to the page. This is a trend in technology lately. Do you think it's a marketing thing? I mean, look at the iPhone. People told me now that somebody who said yesterday he went to AT&T's site to get the big iPhone, the iPhone 6 Plus, and it's backordered till Thanksgiving? What? I know it's middle of October for the Apple site, and well, I haven't checked today. What? And this Moto 360, which everybody was, you know, kind of excited about. This is what they call an Android Wear watch. Watches are, for some reason, the big thing. I think because of the rumors that Apple was doing a watch for the last couple of years, everybody said, well, if Apple's doing one, it must be. Apple must know what they're doing, so we better do one. Samsung has no fewer than six watches. Six different watches on sale. This is the one Motorola makes. Now, Motorola is still a Google company. They've sold it, but the sale won't go through till next year, so technically, I guess this is the official Google Android Wear watch because it's from Google. And it's pretty. It's black. It's the most watch-like. It's got a round face. In fact, we thought, oh, golly, the round face, that's so natural. Inevitably, Apple will do a round face, won't they? No. Apple made kind of a golden pillow for your arm with rounded, you know, it's puffy, rounded and rounded and rounded. But I like the Moto 360. So one question everybody's been asking after a tech blog called The Verge reported that the battery life was terrible on it, that you couldn't get through a full day. That's, by the way, I understand people who say, oh, no, my watch has to last all week or all year. So certainly a real watch would. But after all, don't you have to charge your phone every night? And I think your watch, you just put it next to it. And this the Moto 360 comes with a very nice dock that turns it into a clock. You put it in sideways and it shows you the battery charge, but also the time. And it's kind of like a little table clock almost. It's kind of bright. Even at its dimmest, it's really too bright for my nightstand. But, so battery life, well, it's fine, except unlike the other Android Wear watches, you have to turn off the ambient light sensor. And the Moto 360 warns you on this. If you turn it on, your battery life's going to suffer. And yeah, you can't get through a day with the ambient light sensor on. Now, the thing the ambient light sensor does is it keeps the watch face on a little bit all the time. It's dim when you're not looking at it. And then when you turn it to look at it, as with all of these smartwatches, it turns on. That's kind of the thing now. I find that half the time the Moto 360, I'll turn to look at it, it doesn't turn on, and that's a little frustrating. But then there's a little stem on the side. It's, you know, kind of almost a watchy thing that lets you can push it. And you see what time it is. They have pretty clock faces. Of all of the smartwatches I've worn, and I've worn them all, every one of them, including the Basis and all the Samsungs and everything, except for the newest Samsungs, they're not out yet. This is the most watch-like, the most, I think it's pretty, it works, it does the job. It's complete, but let's be fair. It's not how the watch looks. There are okay. Well, let's talk about it. There's different customers for a smartwatch. There's the traditional watch wearers. For them, it's jewelry. And this is no Patek Philippe. This is no Cartier. I have a couple of nice watches. I like watches. I think they're beautiful. They're works of art. They're heirlooms. No smartwatch is that. It's a gadget on your wrist. So let's get that out of the way. Now, Apple brought a number of watch bloggers into their announcement this week. You know, they announced the new iPhones, the new Apple Pay, Touch to Pay, and the new Apple Watch, which won't be available till next year. And they brought it, and the watch blogger said, "Oh, that's beautiful. Love the bracelets. Love the they call them bracelets, the wristband. Love the bracelets. Beautiful bracelets, and gorgeous." The Apple only announced one price for the $350 for the starting point, $350, and there's one that's 18 karat gold, the Apple Watch edition. That's got to be $1,000. So of course that's aimed at the watch as jewelry crowd, right? But what, you know, if you buy a Patek Philippe, you expect to hand it to your grandchildren. That's not with the Apple Watch. I mean, it's an antique in 3 years. It's not going to be something you're going to hand down. But here's my bottom line on all of these. They're interesting. None of them are like, wow, I don't know how I lived without it. You could say that about the smartphone. Wow. I don't know how I live without a computer in my pocket always connected to the internet. That's useful. You can call a cab. You can pay a bill. You can browse the web. You can send email. You can check your email. You can check your messages. The watch needs a phone. They all need phones. Doesn't do it by itself. And so you already have that. And the watch puts just a little tiny bit of the phone, not even the whole phone, just the notifications on your wrist. Am I wrong? Correct me if I'm wrong. But this is certainly a luxury. And I don't think it's compelling. And I think the Apple Watch is just darn goofy. It's fiddly. You got to turn a little knob. You got to put up. I don't know if I'll be even able to read it. So what does a watch do? It tells you time. People have stopped wearing watches because their phone does that. It's jewelry. It's a lovely piece of artwork on your wrist. That I'll accept. And then that's it. That's what a watch does. The utility is it tells you what time, maybe what date, and if you're really fancy, what the phase of the moon is. I don't know who really needs that. But anyway, that's nice. These smartwatches, they tell you who called, who's ringing your phone right now. But if you want to answer it, you got to pull the phone out of your pocket anyway. Apple's Apple Watch will allow you to tap to pay. on my Moto 360, I can dictate messages. Somebody texts me, I can reply and text in the watch. That's kind of cool. It's nothing that you, at least for me, I feel like gotta have it. And I think technology needs to have a gotta have it, don't you think? Sony calls it Kondo. I was watching the Sony announcement last week in Berlin, and they kept talking about condos. And I thought, why are they talking about condos? It's a Japanese word. It means the emotional appeal, the wow factor. To me, there is very little emotional appeal to these. Will you correct me if I'm wrong? Because I'm just one guy. I think it's an interesting category. I think it's a non-starter. And what was interesting to me is everybody thought Apple is going to fix this. They did it, right, with the iPod. There were a lot of MP3 players. Apple nailed it. With the iPhone, there were a lot of smartphones, but Apple nailed it. They reinvented it. They made it a category. There have been tablets for 10 years. Microsoft has been pushing tablets for a decade, but Apple nailed it with the iPad. Not so much with the Apple Watch. I still am unconvinced. Now, it's not out yet. Maybe I'll get one in 4 months and say, oh, gotta have it. Maybe that's, you know, I'm not being completely fair because I haven't played with it, but I'm telling you, I guess, because don't feel left out. It's like a cartoon where nobody, you know, people don't get the joke and you feel dumb and you don't want to say, well, I don't get it. There's nothing to get. If you look at the watches out today and you go, I don't get it. Well, you're not alone. I don't get it either. And I'm the tech guy. I ought to get it. I'm the one's going to buy it. Let's talk. Maybe I'm wrong. Do you disagree? Maybe you're trying to decide which size phone to get. We could talk about that too. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Now, I have to say, of course, I got up at midnight on Thursday, Friday, you know. I got up 11:55 p.m. on Thursday and sat down at my computer and started refreshing the Apple Store. I refreshed for an hour. It never came up because I wanted to buy one of these new iPhones. I'm holding up. I know it's the radio, so you can't see it, but I'm holding to the microphone. Something that a lot of people all over the country did over the last couple of days. A paper mock-up of the iPhone 6, 4.7-inch screen, and the iPhone 6 Plus, the 5.5-inch screen. Because people, a lot of iPhone users, knowing these are bigger, significantly bigger in one case, than the existing iPhone, were thinking to themselves, can I live with a giant phone? Now, as someone who's been using giant phones for a couple of years now, I've already made that choice. I love the giant phone. But a lot of people had these paper mock-ups of the... Now, here's the original... I don't know. This radio. I don't know why I'm showing you. Look into your radio. The original iPhone next to even the 4.7. So I'll have a 4.7 next Friday. That was the only thing I could get. I never got anything from Apple. They never came through. Some people, I was watching Twitter, of course, and some people on the Twitter said, oh, use the Apple's iPad app for the store and you can buy it there. I tried that. That didn't work either. So then I went around to the phone companies because, you know, they were also offering pre-order at midnight on Friday. And I pre-ordered from Sprint for my mom. I got her the big one because she likes her Galaxy Note 2. So I know she likes a 5.5-inch phone. And then on Verizon, which, by the way, of all the sites, Sprint was really struggling. T-Mobile never came up. But Verizon, push, nice, fast. I think you can still get the little iPhone, the iPhone 6, the 4.7. It's not so little, but the little-ish iPhone, the smaller of the two. I think you can still get it, and maybe even by this Friday. But so I ordered the little. So on Friday, so next week, next Saturday, I'll have the little one and I'll give you kind of my first impressions. But I do want to say this, because the phone I've loved for the last year, isn't it crazy? This is like you're like a girlfriend. I probably spend more time with my phone in bed anyway than with my girlfriend. That's a terrible admission. But it's kind of true. Don't you just, you know, you can't sleep. You pull your phone over and you touch it. Let's see what my friends are doing on Instagram. So the one I've been spending all that time with for the last year and I love is the Moto X. I'm a fan. I was just talking about the Moto 360 watch. Well, Motorola has updated the X and it's 5.2 inches. It's 1080p. It's got a much better camera. They've also announced a little earbud. Speaking of virtual girlfriend, did you see her that with Scarlett Johansson as the operating system from, you know, the operating system from the Playboy Mansion? Hi. It giggled and stuff. And Joaquin Phoenix was, you know, kind of fell in love with her. And it's actually a very interesting movie if you haven't seen it, because I think it presages the future where these things have become lifelike. They're like a human. And so he has a little earbud he puts in the ear, and it's Scarlett Johansson's voice, but it's a computer operating system. And he literally falls in love with it. They start going on dates. And he can't relate to human women because he's got Scarlett Johansson in his ear. So Motorola's making that. It's called The Hint. And it goes... Yeah, I have to think they saw the movie and they said, well, that'd be cool to have. Now, unfortunately, it's that kind of metallic Google voice. It's a woman. I guess if you're in Britain, you can make it a guy. You wouldn't mind, would you? A guy's voice in your... You know... Amy Adams is in that movie, and she had she fell in love with her operating system. So it could go either way. So Motorola is going to put both. The 360 is going to go back on sale because they sold out immediately. By the way, that you never know when Apple sells out or Motorola sells out, if that means they only had five of them, or if demand was great, so great that they sold out even a huge number. They don't tell you. We're just out of them. In the case of the Moto 360, I have to think it was more that they didn't have very many than the demand was so huge. But who knows? We don't know. In any event, those will go back on sale Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Central Time. You'll be able to pre-order the Moto X and the Moto Hint. They say they don't tell you on the webpage. The official Motorola blog has this information, just went up. They don't tell you on the webpage when you'll get it, but you could pre-order it. The iPhone is what, $600 or $700? This is $500 unsubsidized. $99 with a 2-year contract. So it's considerably less than the iPhone. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to give each a fair shake. And then there's lots of others. The LG G3, the Samsung Galaxy Note 4. We have many choices these days of our virtual friends, our virtual spouses. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond has the weekend off, so she could be with her virtual friend. And of course, that means Kim Schaffer's here. I don't know who that was, but what she's doing this weekend. So who should I talk to?
Got Lott, and he's in Fort Lauderdale, and he needs help with his Comcast DVR and optical sound.
Ah, an interesting question. Hi, Lott.
Hi there. Good afternoon or good morning. Here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Yeah. The sun's gone over the yardarm somewhere in the world.
Okay, so my great cable company, Comcast.
Don't we love them?
Well, you praised them a couple of weeks ago, and I come to bury them, Caesar, not praise them.
Look, don't make people think that I love Comcast, because that wouldn't be fair.
All right.
But so, I did, because I've been so negative about their customer service and just, you know, all of that stuff, I had to say I like the new X1 set-top box. I was quite impressed. Is that what you have?
No, I have the regular DCX34.
Yeah, that's terrible.
DVR.
That one is awful.
Okay, I can't get any optical sound coming out of it.
There's an optical sound connector.
Yes, in the back, and there's also a coax in the back. Both of them are outputs, but none of them work. Except, now here's the exception. When I pull out the plug, reset the box for 20 seconds, I get the sound coming out.
So almost certainly that means they have disabled it.
Okay, that's
so right. Here's the deal. These are from Motorola. Motorola makes them for a lot of different companies, and they put ports on them. You'll also notice a FireWire port, a USB port, several USB. There's all sorts of ports on the back, but okay. It's up to the cable company that's renting it to you to enable them or disable them. They put them there for convenience, but it's not necessarily enabled. So it may be, and I don't know, because I use HDMI, and frankly, I think this is probably what they want you to do. Is use the HDMI, which will give you digital audio. You just have to separate it out. You want optical.
I want optical, yes.
Not because it's better, right? Just because that's what your system requires.
No, well, because it's better.
Not better. It's the same exact digital signal as you get from HDMI. Exactly the same. And the HDMI does give you digital audio out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, you know, those cable boxes you get from your cable company, they determine what back ports work and not. It may be that there's something wrong with the optical port, but it may also be that they don't enable it. But here's the key. You get optical, you know, digital. Optical is just digital, okay? It's using light over glass, like a fiber optic, but it's digital. It's ones and zeros coming out of there. The exact same ones and zeros also come out of the HDMI port, along with ones and zeros for video. They're muxed together, multiplexed together, but they're there. And you, what I do, and a good AV, I think nowadays, if you're serious about, watching TV, it's a funny phrase, watching TV. If you're serious about that, you should have an AV receiver, because it's going to have multiple HDMI ports in. It's going to have optical in and other stuff, but it's going to have multiple HDMI ports in, and then an HDMI port out that goes to your big screen TV. And you can attach multiple things to this AV receiver, including your Roku box, your Apple TV, your DVD player, your cable box. At least you're going to have three or four of those. And they go in, and then you use the AV receiver to choose which one. And that AV receiver is receiving a pure digital signal for both audio and video over that single HDMI cable. Just, it's the cleanest, simplest way to do it. The AV receiver handles the audio perfectly. There's another advantage to that. The two are synchronized. So it's not unusual if you use a separate audio channel that you're going to have to delay it a little bit. Or delay the video a little bit so that you get perfect lip sync. You don't have to worry about that. HDMI handles that. 8888 Ask Leo. Walter's in Huntington, West Virginia, our next caller. Hi, Walter.
Hi, Leo. I have a kind of a peculiar problem. When I take a photograph of my HDMI television using my iPad, or it turns out even with a digital camera,
yeah,
oftentimes the whites of people's eyes are pale blue.
Oh, that's interesting.
And white shirts are blue.
Yeah.
Any idea how?
Yeah, it's a difference
that?
In the refresh rate between the digital camera and the television screen. So if you think about how the television screen works, your eye, all of this stuff works because of something called persistence of vision. Your eye, in effect, is mixing stuff down. That's how movies worked, right? Movies are just a sequence of stills running by the screen 24 times a second. And because of persistence of vision, it looks like fluid motion. The eye, in effect, puts it all together. Well, similarly, on a television set, of course, it depends how the set's working, but in most cases, LCD sets, you've got shutters. An LCD, a liquid crystal display, has a white light in the background, and then shutters that open and close to provide different colors on the dots. And the problem is your camera also has a number of times it does that a second is called a refresh rate. The camera has its own refresh rate. If they're not in sync, you might get a different portion of the screen. So sometimes you'll get a floating black bar. Depends on what you're seeing. Most television sets now are what we call progressive. So you're not getting an interlaced picture, so at least you're getting the whole picture. But my guess is that if things look a little bit odd, it might be because of refresh rate. The other possibility, when whites turn out blue on a digital camera, is it's poor white balance. And if you import that picture into any photo editing program, you can adjust the white balance. In fact, a program like Lightroom that pros use has a little, and Photoshop does this too. I don't remember what iPhoto does for white balance. They do have certainly a white balance setting. But there's a little dropper in Lightroom and in Photoshop. And you can either click it on something that's supposed to be true white or something that's supposed to be true gray, middle gray. And it will say, oh, that's gray. And then it will adjust the entire picture so that it gives you a true white or a true gray. So if you've got a white shirt and you know it's white, or the whites of somebody's eyes, which aren't always white, but assuming somebody who's wide awake, and you click on that with the dropper, that would then, the computer would then say, I see. So that's white. So we're going to adjust color temperature. We're going to adjust the color temperature for the whole image so that the whites are white, and then everything else will actually be more accurate as well. So it's two possibilities. It could be the refresh interaction, or it could be that your digital camera, I mean, the iPad is kind of a phone cameras are not the best cameras in the world, but it may be it's misinterpreting the white balance because of what it's seeing, in which case that's a simple thing to fix. You could fix that in your photo editor. Greg in New Orleans. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I've been wanting to talk to you forever. I've been watching you since I was about 15, now I'm about
29. He's 53. It's an amazing thing. Yeah. I am so old.
Yeah, I actually now work for a big technology company you might have heard of called EMC.
Yeah, sure, of course, storage company. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of because of you, man. I just wanted to.
I take the rap. I've been crafting geeks, handcrafting geeks since 1992. And I take the praise or the blame. I'm not sure which. Well, I'm glad Do you enjoy your career in tech?
I do. Yeah, I mean, I go around to a lot of different big companies.
That's great.
Who own our equipment, hospitals, large construction, oil companies.
I'm so glad you found a career you liked. I think you probably liked it already if you watch Tech TV. So,
Yeah.
You probably already were a little bit of a geek before you met me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, you helped, that's for sure.
So what can I do for you today?
So I kind of wanted to call in with both a question and sort of an answer for some previous callers
Good.
That called in.
Love it when we all help each other out. That's great.
Yeah, for sure. I've noticed a lot of people have called in asking about how to get data off of old floppies, which is sort of hard to do now. I mean, you can't really just go to Best Buy and get like a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive.
No, it's an interesting challenge. And if you really think about it, in the scope of things, a floppy disk or a zip disk, that's not that long ago.
No. Yeah. I mean, I know you've said that the data on these disks probably will not last a whole lot longer.
Yeah, that kind of magnetic media falls apart. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I heard that, it kind of popped in my head. I was thinking, you know, I have some of this old stuff that maybe I can do. So I actually made a website with Squarespace, and I was like, maybe I can help some people out.
What's the site?
So the site is drivenfloppy.com.
Drive and the letter N?
And as in A-N-D.
Okay.
Or just Drive and Floppy Rescue, either one.
I see it.
And
I see it.
Yeah. And
so
I
is this because you have a bunch of old floppies? I mean, drives?
Yeah, I do. And I have some family members who had some old floppies that were, you know, they were asking me, how do I get
great.
Some?
Now, what kind of floppies, what kind of media do you handle?
Well, pretty much everything except for one, which is part of the question, which is the only one I can't really figure out how to do, but thankfully no one's really asked me about, are the big 8-inch floppies.
I see you do hard drives, 3.5, 5 1/4, zip, CDs, DVDs, jazz drives, and 8-inch floppies. So you need to find... So 8-inch is a really old... In fact, the word floppy comes from those 8-inch discs because, well, if you think about it, they really were floppy. A diskette, most modern ones, the 3.5 ones, those are firm. They're made of a plastic shell. But a 5 1/4 and even much more so an 8-inch, they really were floppy.
Yeah.
I used to have an 8-inch drive on my old PDP-10, but I don't think it's... So have you tried... Hold on a second. We're going to take a break. Have you tried eBay?
Yeah, I've sort of searched.
All right. We're going to see if we can help you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He works for a big data storage company. Thought he'd do it as sideline business, helping people convert their old floppies to data on a hard drive that they can then use. But he's got a problem. No, nobody has sent you yet an 8-inch disk.
No, thankfully, it's not really something that common.
The demand is
not... No.
In fact, I wonder, because 8-inch drives, we stopped using 8-inch drives pretty universally about 25 years ago. So
exactly.
I don't know what state they'd be in.
I don't either. I mean, thankfully, most, even the 5 1/4 inch floppies, most of them have been stored somewhat well, so you can still get data off of them. I'm not sure about the 8-inch. It's just sort of wondering, because I don't even think you could hook it to a modern computer.
Right. What would the interface be? You'd have to patch something together that got to USB eventually. And the other issue is, what are you going to do with it? It's not going to be pictures on there. It may, if it's text files, no problem.
Yeah.
But if it's Wang word processor files or PDP-8 assembly code, I don't know what you're going to do with it. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is more just nostalgia for people.
Well,
they have these sort of want to...
Mike B. in our chat room actually has a solution. I didn't even think about this. He said, but the computers that run our nuclear arsenal here in the States are running on 8-inch floppies. So just go over there to the mountain where the nuclear missiles are and say, hey, can I borrow your 8-inch drive?
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that true, Mike B? Don't tell me that. That's not... That can't possibly be true. And there are some people in the chat room who have... For instance, Harley Hub says, I have an Epson dual. That can't be true. 3.5 8-inch? No. I could see a 5 1/4 8-inch, but nobody wants both. 3.5 is so much later than the 8-inch drives.
Right.
Well,
I mean, I was just wondering, really.
Apparently, it was on 60 Minutes. They showed these computers running our strategic air command. And they're running on 8-inch floppies.
Wow, that sounds real safe.
I remember starting on a San Francisco radio station in 1987, 27 years ago. And they were still using an old PDP 10, I think, with an 8-inch floppy. In fact, the program to mix to do the music playlists, the program, this is a KNBR in San Francisco, the program was running off of an 8-inch floppy. And I remember I would go in the office to create the music playlist, and you'd hear chunk as the head slammed down on the floppy, and it went, I mean, this thing was like, you know,
loud.
Yeah. So say eBay doesn't have a whole bunch of them, huh?
Well, they do. You can sometimes get the drives themselves. They're sort of expensive because they're sort of rare. So if you have one in working condition,
right,
that's pretty. Unusual.
I would say keep the website says, you know, driveandfloppyrescue.com, it says we'll do 8-inch floppies. Keep that up there, and if anybody sends you one, then maybe panic time.
Yeah, then think about it more seriously. Yeah.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. I'm glad we could give you a little plug. This is a great idea.
Yeah, for sure.
Driveandfloppyrescue.com, and thank you for using our sponsor, Squarespace. I appreciate it.
Oh, I love them. Yeah, they're great.
They are good.
Good.
Well, nice to talk to you, Greg. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work at EMC. Good company for Enterprise Storage. Bob on the line from my old stomping grounds, Rhode Island. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Good. I have a question. I'm just about to get my first Mac.
Wow.
What does
Apple owe the pleasure?
Well, I'm trying to get myself into web development, and that's supposedly the tool of choice.
Yeah, in fact, if you go to a conference for web design or web developers, all you see is those glowing Apple logos out there in the crowd.
Right. Yeah. Right. And apparently it's a functional thing, not just it's wonderful to have an Apple.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. The one thing Macs do have an advantage of is underneath the hood, they're a Unix operating system.
Exactly.
So they do have a terminal command with FTP, SFTP, SSH. All of Ruby comes on it, Python comes on it, all of the things that web developers do use frequently. Certainly you could install on a Windows machine, but it's already on a Mac. So
exactly. I was thinking of that, but it sounds like you're doing a lot of backflips to arrange that environment.
It's kind of a pain to get Python or Ruby running on a Windows machine. It's kind of a pain.
Right. So I have two questions. Hopefully you can address both of them. But the first one is I will want to run Windows on a Mac because I have lots of Windows programs that I'll still want to access. I'll be kind of straddling both worlds for a while, but it would be nice to have access to all my stuff on the Mac.
Macs have an advantage. Macs can run Windows. Windows machines can't run Macintosh software. Apple won't let them.
Yep.
So,
right.
There's two ways to run Windows on a Macintosh. Apple has a program that's on your hard drive already in the utility folder called Boot Camp. And what Boot Camp will do is make some room on your hard drive, repartition it, and so scooch over the Mac OS X, make some space. And then if you need to have, in both cases, you'll need to have your own Windows disk, a legitimate Windows disk that you can register and license with Microsoft and all that. But when you make Boot Camp, what it'll do is it'll create room on the drive. It'll download from Apple the latest drivers for your particular hardware. This is important because only Apple makes the drivers for the Apple hardware. You put those on a USB key or a floppy if you have one. And then it will reboot and you can install Windows and then use the drivers that you've saved from the install. And now you've got what's called a dual boot system. When you first turn it on, you can choose, by holding down the Option key, you can choose Windows or Macintosh. That's nice because it's a full Windows machine running at 100%. Windows owns the system.
Right.
But that's a lot because you can't choose, you know, you have to choose at boot and you have to reboot to go back to the Macintosh. It's also possible to run it in emulation. And this is something now, a lot of, you know, Windows has built-in emulation. This is the thing everybody's doing. Because Apple and Windows and Mac OS X both run on Intel chips, it's not such a big deal to run a program under Macintosh that can launch Windows programs and even launch the Windows operating system. And so that's called emulation. There are three different programs that are widely used. There's VirtualBox, which is free from Oracle, virtualbox.org. And it's free, which is a big advantage, but it doesn't. Yeah. It's not maybe as fast and as flexible, and doesn't have a lot of the features of the commercial programs. One of which is VMware Fusion. That's the one I use. VMware is probably the biggest emulation company, And the other one is from a company called Parallels.
Okay. Okay, yeah, those are the... I did a little research, and I bumped into VMware Fusion.
I use VMware Fusion and Windows 8.1 on my Mac, and it's great. And one of the nice things, they have something called coherence mode, which means you don't really have to have a full Windows... I mean, you do, but you don't have to see the full Windows operating system running. You can just run Microsoft Word for Windows in a window. So you're still in the Mac, and you're using your Windows programs as if they're native.
Okay, and that's VMware Fusion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it. And they just updated it for the newest OS X,
right,
which you'll want to do.
They have a call it a standard version and a pro version. Any reason to...
Well, you can look at the features. I doubt you need the pro version.
Right. Okay. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll jump to my next question if I have still have a few minutes or a few seconds.
Yeah.
I have
we don't need to run any ads. Just keep talking. It's okay.
Thanks. I have a couple of external drives that I've been using to back up things, which I do regularly. I have, I'd like to read those on the Mac. They're NTFS formatted. So it looks as though there's something, I don't know if you've heard of this company, Paragon Software.
Yeah, I've used it. Yeah.
NTFS for Mac.
Yep. There's a couple of... So NTFS, the Windows file system, is different from the Macintosh file system. So that means disks formatted by Windows and NTFS are not readable or writable on the Mac. Actually, they are readable. I think OS X will read them, but OS X won't write NTFS files. So, so Paragon's very good. I've used that. There are many other ways to do that, including some free versions that allow... They're basically plugins that allow you to... do you need to write NTFS or just read those files?
Well, I guess it would be nice to have the option to write.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes to some terminal commands that apparently will make it possible. I don't know. This is pretty... this is a hack. Maybe just get Paragon. I've used Paragon for years. It's very effective. By the way, when you run... Now, you may not need this. If you're going to run a virtualization like VMware Fusion, it'll read those files.
Okay, that was going
to
be...
So you don't need to do that. You only need to do that if you don't have a copy of Windows to hand.
Okay. All right, so if I'm running the VirtualBox... When it's in that mode?
Yep. You can read and write NTFS because you're running Windows. It's kind of a clever little hack, isn't it? Out of time this time, but we'll be back with more. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, cell phones, smartphones, you bet. Digital photography coming up. 33 and a third after the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, will update his assignment and give us a little photographic myth busting. Meanwhile, the website is techguylabs.com. I should mention that more often because that's free. There's no sign up. We don't ask for your email address. I don't want to know. But you can go there and get information about anything I say on the show, links to articles we talk about. After the show, we put up audio and video, so if you miss an episode, you can go back and listen or watch. We put it on YouTube. And if you go to the website, techguylabs.com, you can actually you can click on a day, a particular episode of the show, but you can also click on a particular hour of that show and even a particular question of that show, and you'll jump right to that part. So if you heard me talk about something, search the site for the question. You can go right to the question, watch me or listen to me answer the question, and then see the text comments, the links, and all of that stuff, and add your own thoughts, because that's a big part of it. I encourage you, if you've got a better idea, there's no need to shout at the radio. Don't give yourself a heart attack. Just go to techguylabs.com and put it in the comments there. That way everybody will benefit, and we'll all, I think over time, I think the idea is that site should be just jam-packed with goodness. And I promise, it will always be free. I will never... make it, you don't have to jump through hoops to use it. Just go there. TechGuyLabs.com. The phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. That's free in the U.S. and Canada and free if you use Skype if you're outside that area. David's in Pennsylvania, our next caller. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. This is I was wanting to tell you about, I just recently got the OnePlus One.
Yeah.
And, it's like my phone, cell phone is, I currently got Verizon.
Yeah.
And you know how.
Now, the OnePlus One is, of course, requires GSM, so you have to use it on T-Mobile or AT&T.
Right now, I'm actually talking to you on the One.
Ah, but how are you doing that?
I got it tethered by a Wi-Fi to my hotspot to my Verizon phone, and I'm using Vonage mobile app.
Okay, seems like a lot of hoops to jump through to use this phone. I have a OnePlus One as well. This is a weird company and a weird phone because you can't just go and buy it. You go to OnePlus.net and they'll say, "Oh, well, the price is right, $300 for the 32 gigabyte version, or is it 16?" I bought the 64-gigabyte version. That's only $350. For a high-end phone like this, and this is absolutely a flagship phone, they call it a flagship killer, that's an amazing price. But you can't just outright buy it, which is weird. You have to get an invitation somehow, either from somebody who already has one, and I bet you, David, you're pretty popular with your friends because you already have one, or you have to do a contest. I'm waiting. That was smart marketing when they first came out with these several months ago. I'm waiting for them to just open it up. I think it would do very well, but it's not. But you know what? If they wait too much longer, times will pass them by. New iPhones are now here. Motorola X is coming out. We've got the Galaxy Note 4 coming out this month. I mean, all of a sudden, this won't be a flagship killer. It'll just be kind of an also-ran. I can't really understand the company strategy here. It was good marketing, got a lot of attention. People are aware of this phone, at least in the geek community. One of the things that's unique about it is it's running Cyanogen Mod, which is a really kind of nice version of Android. It's a full Android phone. But you can't just buy it. It means most people are going to go, well, I'm not going to, what, I have to do something to get an invitation to pay full price for the, I don't understand. And they'll just go and get it from their carrier. So I can only think they must either not be able to make very many, maybe they're making them by hand, or they don't want to sell them for some reason. Maybe the cost is so low that they don't make any money on it. Maybe it's just to build a name for the company. This is what I think. To build a name for the company so they can announce the next phone in a couple of months. Everybody will know, has heard of OnePlus now, and that one they'll charge more for and make available, widely available. I cannot figure out this marketing strategy. I just can't. Caleb in Newfoundland, New Jersey. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome back. How are you?
Doing well. And yourself?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Well, once again, I thought I'd come back. And I have yet another photography question.
All right. Go ahead.
So instead of, like, doing a sensible thing, going out with friends or something, I was bored, so I went through my camera settings, and it has RAW, it has Fine, it has JPEG, has, like, a bunch of settings, and I know that they all, like, it's a different way, I guess you'd call it, like, rendering, or, like, if they save the image. What is the difference? Like,
that's a great question.
With RAW, JPEG?
Yeah, not all cameras have RAW, but the higher-end, fancier ones do. And I shoot RAW almost all the time. And I recommend, Caleb, I know you're serious about your photography. And you want to become, do you want to become a pro? Is that your goal, or is it just a very serious hobby for you?
I mean, who wouldn't want to become a pro?
I know, what a good job.
I just want to be an average.
But you're serious about it. So you should shoot RAW. Here's what RAW is. RAW, so you understand how a digital camera works. It uses lenses, glass lenses, very much like any kind of camera, film cameras too. But once the light goes through the lens on a film camera, it hits a piece of film, a film that is sensitive to light. And depending on the amount of light that's hitting it, will it take a picture. Well, of course, there's no film in a digital camera. Instead of the film in exactly the same places where the film would be is a sensor, a CMOS, complementary metal oxide silicon sensor. And the sensor has, and you've heard this term, a number of pixels, megapixels, because they're usually in the millions of pixels. How many megapixels in your camera? Do you know?
It's 16.1.
Okay, so that means it has 16.1 million dots on that sensor. That's individual points that it can record. And on each of those dots, it records a certain number of bits of detail. Usually it's 8 bits, sometimes it's more of detail. Now, if you want exactly what the sensor saw, exactly, you'll use RAW. That's what RAW means, unprocessed, unfiltered. This is the data that came off the sensor. Now, in order to look at that, something has to process it so you can see it on the screen. And if you're using RAW images, this is the drawback. That means you're going to load it into a program that understands the RAW and can render an image. Because the RAW, if you looked at the RAW data, it doesn't look like anything like a photo. It's, you know, it's not in color. There's all sorts of weird stuff. There's all the information is there, but it needs to be processed by a computer. The camera has a little computer. And in fact, the image you're seeing in the viewfinder or on the little LCD screen is not RAW. That is a JPEG. That is a rendered image using the camera's own software. So the camera can, in fact, take all of those dots, all of that information it's received from the sensor, and turn it into a picture. If it saves, if you tell the camera, that's all I want is the JPEG, it will just say, it won't save all the RAW data. It will save a considerably smaller amount of data. When you get a RAW image from your camera, it's going to be 16 megabytes. It's going to be big. But if you get a JPEG, it's going to be considerably smaller because JPEG is, as we know, compressed. It's a lossy compression. It's worse because it takes data out. So JPEG is only good if you don't really want to post-process the photo, if you trust the camera's rendering engine, if you because you can't make a lot of changes to a JPEG. You can, but it's going to degrade the photo. So generally, pros shoot RAW. Use the software, whether it's Lightroom, iPhoto, Photoshop, whatever they use, to process that and create an image which they then can work with. Always better to have the more data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I kind of got into the weeds there explaining what RAW is to Caleb. The short answer is RAW is every bit of information the camera recorded from the sensor. And most cameras, point-and-shoot cameras, camera phones, they give you a compressed version. It's a lot smaller, called JPEG. If you're serious about your photography, shoot RAW if you can, because you want all that image. But the only problem with that is you'll have to post-process. Not always, but you're going to have to import it into something that'll turn it into a JPEG before you can share it out. Most of the world wants JPEG. JPEG is, though, a compressed format and a lossy compression, which means that little bits are taken out of the detail. So I think it's always better if you can to shoot RAW and then process. All right, Caleb, good question, though. Maybe I got a little too much in the weeds. You know, we'll ask Chris Marquardt. He's a pro. He probably can answer this quickly and easily. Meanwhile, to line four, where Robert in San Bernardino's hanging on. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Leo. I have a question about cloud storage and syncing to a desktop.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a professor at beautiful California Baptist University in Riverside. And I want to take all my files that are currently on my desktop, put them into the cloud, and then have them sync with either my laptop or my desktop.
Okay. Have you tried? There are so many ways to do this. So iCloud will do it if you have an Apple. If you have a Windows, Microsoft's OneDrive will do it. Dropbox will do it on any kind of computer. Where are the files originating?
So let's say, for example, I have all the files in my desktop in my office.
Is it always in the same spot, or will they could be on different places?
Different places.
Okay.
So I have the same.
That's why you want to synchronize. That's what synchronizing really is all about, is making those folders match in all different places, and files could be added in any of those three places.
Okay. Well, I've tried Carbonite Sync and Share.
That's a backup solution. Now, you want to use something that is designed to do what you're saying. So Carbonite's great, but it's more of a backup solution than it is a syncing solution. There are free programs you can do syncing locally, but it sounds like some of these computers are elsewhere in the world.
Correct.
Yeah. I would say Dropbox is probably the single easiest thing to do.
Now, would Microsoft OneDrive do the trick for me?
Yes, it would. There are also, and there's a great, there are a few third-party programs that are maybe better than Dropbox, but just not as well-known. One of the reasons Dropbox is the go-to is that it's been around so long, lots of programs use it as well. If you use a smartphone, for instance, a lot of programs will share their files via Dropbox. But there's a great program called SpiderOak that is as good as Dropbox. There's BitTorrent Sync, which is free. I mean, I can go on and on and on. There's a lot of ways to do this. Now, one of the issues, in fact, I use something called a file transporter that is not, that's my personal cloud. If you're worried about, and I think nowadays people might be, other people getting access to your cloud, and certainly if you're storing it on Dropbox or Microsoft or iPhoto or iCloud, those companies have access to your data. If you don't want some third party to have access to your data, transporter's great because it's basically a roll your own cloud. You have a hard drive at work and a hard drive at home. You have software running on all your devices. It automatically synchronizes with the transporter. And then if you really want belt and suspenders, the transporters can sync with each other. And that's nice. Now I have full synchronization. That's what I do, by the way, across the,
okay,
across
and
the board.
I definitely need something that's HIPAA compliant.
HIPAA compliant, transporter.
Transporter.
In fact, it's specifically HIPAA compliant. So go to filetransporter.com. And the other thing that's good about that is you're not paying a monthly fee because you're not storing anything in the cloud. So now I got the transporter when it first came out, and I gave it a poor review at the time because the software was a little kludgy. It still is a little funky and hard to understand, but it does the job. And I'm very happy with it. And the nice BitTorrent Sync will do a similar thing, by the way, and that's free also. The transporter is a separate drive on your network outside your computer. And the computer and the phone and everything else are syncing to that. If you use BitTorrent Sync, then that might be more to what you want. BitTorrent Sync will then synchronize a folder on your computer with a folder on your laptop with a folder on your computer at work, and they can all stay in sync. The problem with BitTorrent Sync is they've never released the source code. So while I believe it's trustworthy, it's not HIPAA compliant because it's not been reviewed. So for HIPAA compliant, I strongly suggest File Transporter.
All right. Well, thank you for your help.
Yeah, and no monthly fees. Nice. So what I have is a file transporter at home, a file transporter at work. Each has a 2 terabyte drive on it, so I've got lots of storage. You'll then run the file transporter software on your desktops and laptops and on your smartphones. And they'll all synchronize with one another. Now, you have to pick the folders that are going to sync. And that's true of all of these things. It won't sync. You don't want to sync your whole desktop. You want to sync some specific folders. File Transporter is kind of interesting because you can pick your documents folder. It's cross-platform, work on all Windows and Mac. I've been very happy with that. And that doesn't have a monthly fee. $99 for the little device that connects to a hard drive. So you buy a $100 hard drive and a $99 device. That's $200 at your work, $200 at home. For $400, you've got a permanent backup solution that is secure, HIPAA compliant. HIPAA, as you probably know, is the Health Insurance Portability Act that protects patients' records, has very high standards for privacy. If you're a physician and you've got medical records and you want those to sync, you have to make sure that you comply with the federal regulations under HIPAA. And so you're going to look for a solution that's HIPAA compliant. And in fact, Transporter is. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Website techguylabs.com. I'd love to hear from you. What do you use for backup? Somebody in the chat room saying Box.net is also HIPAA compliant. HIPAA compliant. 8888 Ask Leo. Your calls next. Leo Laporte, Tech Guy. There he is. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Thank goodness. Chris Marquardt to the rescue. He is the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. He also debunks photo myths regularly on this show and has many photo workshops, which you'll discover at discoverlightroom.com and his websites. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you? You did not make a hash of the raw thing. You didn't.
I got into the weeds. So Caleb called. He's a budding photographer, as a lot of people are. Digital photography is a fast-growing hobby. And he wanted to know, should he shoot RAW or JPEG? And well, I tried to explain what RAW is, and that's where I really got bogged down.
Well, if he's an ambition photographer, yes, RAW is definitely a good thing.
Now, shoot
RAW. Let me quickly explain what RAW is, because I think I'm pretty much skipping now what I was planning to talk about, and I'll talk about this next week, because the RAW thing is really something that lots of photographers have questions about. So
I bet you get this question all the time for the podcast. I mean, this is
I do.
Yeah, you see it as a setting. You also see in the JPEG settings the choice between fine and I don't even know what that means. So
yeah. So if we look inside the camera, if you look at the sensor, we have three different kinds of pixels: red, green, and blue ones. So we have three color channels, and what the camera does is when it takes a picture, it's actually most people don't know that the sensor is first and foremost an analog device. It's not digital. It's analog. It collects photons, and those photons then get converted into a charge, and then there's a converter that looks after the photo has been taken, looks at every single one of those 20, 30 million pixels and counts the charge and measures the charge in that and then makes that into a digital value for that pixel. So if there is no charge in the pixel, it's black, zero. If it's full, then it's white, and anything in between is like a gray value, a different gray tone, right? So you end up with three different pictures, a red picture, a green picture, and a blue picture. And those are kind of interspersed on the sensor in what we call a Bayer pattern. That's a pattern where red, green, blue, and green, and they're all kind of are mixed up in this picture. And that gets saved to a file. That's called a RAW file. So this is pretty much directly after making that analog picture into a digital picture, that's the RAW file. And if you know file formats, a RAW file is actually pretty similar to a TIFF file. If you have worked with TIFF files, the innards of a RAW file are very similar to a TIFF file, but there are all those interspersed pixels. So even if you could look at the RAW file, it would just look bad. It would look pretty weird. Hardly anything to see on that. So RAW needs computation. RAW needs something a processor needs to do something with RAW. First and foremost, it's called demosaicing. It's this RGB mosaic, this red, green, blue mosaic, has been taken out of it, and there's a lot of math, and color is changed, and contrasts are changed and adjusted, and I don't know, like there's like 7-8 different things that happen at least with a RAW picture when it gets converted to something that you can view on the screen, a JPEG or a preview in your software. So that happens.
And that's the drawback with RAW, is that you have to process it.
And that's actually that happens even if you set your camera to only RAW, to record only RAW files, the camera will still make a JPEG file.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see it on the back of the camera.
That's what you see on the back of the camera. Yeah. It kind of sticks that inside the RAW file. The RAW file has a little container inside that you can stick other files in, and that's a JPEG file that goes in there. So you have a preview, and that's how the camera can display that quickly to you. So the RAW file and this built-in JPEG file is actually can really get in your way. For example, if you set your camera to shoot black and white, you can do this on your camera. Now, if you do this when you shoot RAW, you see a black and white preview on the display. But again, remember, you're looking at a JPEG file that has been created from the RAW file. The actual RAW file is still in color. So
I kind of have this fight with Lisa a lot, because she'll use the scene modes on her camera. Like she's taking a picture of a sunset. She changes it to sunset. Well, it's for sunsets. And I'm trying to explain to her, yeah, but what you're doing is the camera is doing a lot of processing on that file that you can't reverse unless you shoot RAW, then you can reverse it.
Right. But the thing is, if you do this black and white thing in the camera and you come home and insert your card into the computer,
yeah,
your software, Lightroom, Aperture, whatever, imports that and it displays the RAW file to you, and that's
in color, right?
So,
yeah.
So your black and white conversion that you did in the camera doesn't really show at home, so you have to do it again. So
you're getting in the weeds now, too. You're doing the same thing.
Well, but the thing is, you have to be clear about one thing. If you want to shoot RAW, if anyone who wants to shoot RAW needs to know that they need to process those pictures afterwards.
That's
you
the
need to do something with them.
That's the bad news on it. Yeah.
Well, you know, your software will do some default processing on it. You insert the card, you ingest those pictures into the computer, and it will do some default processing, and that's usually it's okay looking. But if you want more, you'll really have to do something. The problem with if you shoot JPEG and you kind of let the camera do all the processing for you, it doesn't only like do the processing for you, it also throws away a lot of the data.
Right.
And if we look at those three different color channels again in RAW, those can record a lot of information. We're talking about like 14 bits of information. That's like 16,000 different brightness levels per color channel. In JPEG, that's 8 bits per color channel. So you have like 256 different levels per color channel. That's not a lot. And if you start tweaking the contrast on those and changing, like making the sky bluer and bringing out the clouds, you can end up with having some artifacts in there. You get some banding and things in the sky. So if you tend to process your pictures and tweak them and change the brightness in areas, you want to go raw.
And you should.
That's what
and you should. Even if you're using, you know, Picasa on Windows or iPhoto on the Mac, when you import your photos, of course, both programs will show you an image, which means they've processed it. They've turned it into a JPEG. But it's nice
to read raw files nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to have the original. The argument against it in the old days was they were giant. But now with big memory cards, big hard drives, that's not nearly the issue it used to be. And all the cameras are fast enough to save them out quickly. Does it slow? It doesn't slow the camera down, does it?
No, not really.
No.
Not really. I mean, the camera has to capture the picture anyway. It has to convert it to RAW file anyway before it makes a JPEG. So the RAW is being created anyway. If you only save JPEG, the RAW is still being made, but it's discarded after the picture has been saved.
If
as a JPEG.
You're serious about photography, look for a camera that does RAW and has that capability. So many point and shoots do. The higher end point and shoots do. And certainly all the DSLRs and the Micro Four Thirds cameras, all the cameras with interchangeable lenses do. By the way, I've been playing with, I bought, so I shouldn't say playing with because it was a pretty penny, the new Sony A7S. This is an interesting camera. I have an A7R, which is a 36 megapixel camera considered by many to be the best sensor on the market and beautiful for a full frame. And then Sony came out with a successor that was even more expensive, but instead of 36 megapixels, it's 12.
Which is still plenty for 12. For most things you need.
And the idea is, well, these bigger pixels, because they're going to be bigger, it's the same size sensor, will capture more light and it'll work better in low light. And I took a lot of pictures by candlelight last night, and I will vouch for them. They look great. It's a great camera. And it has one feature that the A7R doesn't have that I kind of like. Completely silent. So I can sneak up on people.
The A7R has a bit of a clunk.
It has a loud clunk. I think now they're using a digital front curtain, and on the A7R they must have been using a mechanical front curtain, because it's definitely a mechanical clunk. It's not like a recorded clunk that is playing back. You feel it. It's a clunk.
It's mechanical, yeah.
Yeah. So they've moved to a digital curtain. It's a lot of money for that camera, $2,500, but boy, am I happy with the images. It's really what Sony was intending to do, I think. Great camera. Hey, thank you, Chris Marquardt. DiscoverLightroom.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Kim Schaffer filling in for Heather Hammond, answering the phones. You call her, you get on the air, you ask me a question, like Stan from San Fran. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I am going to the Niners game. That's how I am.
I know. I was afraid you weren't going to see me.
What can I do for you, Stan?
Well, I listen to your show all the time. First-time caller. I just wanted to... I got this wild hair the other day.
Uh-oh.
You know, several years ago I went out of town and I needed some extra storage space on the DVR. And they have an eSATA port, so I bought an Apricorn with a 1.5 terabyte in it.
Yeah, nice drive, yeah.
And it worked great for a while. But then, it had to eventually be replaced. And every time that happens, and of course I lose a lot of shows and whatever.
Right.
And so I thought, maybe there's an answer to this. Maybe I can go with a two-bay RAID device that would plug in there, and one drive goes out, plug in another one.
What a clever idea. Well, I would look at, for something like that, it needs to be USB, because that's all your... your desk, your set-top box can handle, right?
No, it's got an eSATA port.
Oh, you said eSATA. That's right. That's nice, because eSATA is lots faster than USB.
I know, but here's my problem. I've ordered two boxes, and I've gotten them here. They don't give enough documentation on what they'll do. So I end up coming back, when they get back, rather, look at the instructions, and they say Mac or PC.
That doesn't matter. Don't worry about that. That's because... No, it's fine. think of your set-top box as a PC. That has to do with interface. Any USB drive will work just fine.
So, okay, but I have to set the settings on it because it has an onboard controller, and they only have instructions for PC or Mac.
Do PC.
Okay.
It's a PC. So the other one I would look at maybe is a Drobo. Drobo isn't technically... A RAID array. They use their own proprietary technology, but they do a very good job of, if a drive fails, you can even hot swap it without...
That's what I want.
Yeah. You can. That means you can take the drive, you don't have to take the device out of the machine. You could just, while it's running, take a drive out, put it in. It has nice lights in the front that show you the status of the drive. I'm a big fan of the Drobos. Now, two drives is probably not what you want. Because two drives, the only way you can do that with two drives is what's called mirroring, RAID 1.
Right, which is what I want, yeah.
Well, that's not what you want, because you're going to get half the capacity. You're going to get the capacity of one drive, because basically you have two. You know, so if you have two 1-terabyte drives in there, you get 1 terabyte of storage, because the other one is identical.
Yeah, well, that's all I need.
Well, I understand. I prefer RAID 5.
Yes.
Which requires a minimum of 3 drives.
Oh, okay.
Then you get 2/3 of the total storage, because there's 1/3 for redundancy, and I find it's more robust than mirroring. So I would go with RAID 5. There are a number of companies that make eSATA RAID 5 drives. Drobo is probably the simplest one. They're not technically RAID 5. They're a RAID 5-like solution, which I think is a very good solution for what you're doing.
Okay. All right. Well, super. That has a hot swap.
Yeah, that's the nice thing. Not all RAID 5 does.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute, though. I want to make sure that they support eSATA. Maybe they don't. Boy, that is weird. The interface is Thunderbolt, USB 3.0, and Ethernet. That seems odd. Apparently, they don't. So,
well, I'm going to give Apricorn a call tomorrow.
Synology would do it. I like Synology, S-Y-N-O-L-O-G-Y. They're true RAID 5. The other thing is, if you get something like that, you might have more flexibility about seeing it on your network and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Apricorn's fine.
Well, I don't know if they offer it, but I'm gonna give them a call tomorrow and see, just for the heck of it, since they already have the DVR. I mean, are you sure that it's a Windows operating system?
It isn't. Doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
Those settings are meaningless.
All right, good.
It'll be fine. Because I think it's just going to connect, and it sees it as an eSATA drive, and it doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
It might have – I don't know, in fact, why they even have settings, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well.
The file systems are different, but the file system is hidden anyway.
That's right.
So I can't imagine that would make too much difference.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot.
Cables can do eSATA to external SATA. I'm looking at the chat room just to see what they think. Is eSATA treated like USB? USB, the interface hides the internals of the drive from the computer. So it just looks like, you know, it could be format. It doesn't matter how it's format. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. eSATA might be more like it's an internal drive on the local bus. I'm not sure what. And then they're saying that Drobo S does do eSATA. Apparently, the chat room has no opinion. Hey, do I need just real quickly, Nathan? Do I need to do a stop for a commercial here? Can I go on? I'm not sure what to do. Yeah, it feels like eSATA isn't quite as hidden from the interface like USB is. USB really intermediates between the computer and the drive. eSATA might just look like an internal drive, in which case the operating system would make a difference. Not sure. I don't know. But, you know, just the fact that they don't have a setting for TiVo or whatever, I would just set it for PC. I bet you it'll work fine. Moving on to Roy. He's calling from Orange County. Hey, Roy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well.
Listen, Adobe's driving me nuts. I listen to a lot of radio via streams like KFI, KEIB, and, of course, Twit. I keep getting error messages, and right now I'm looking at your screen, and it's blank. It says the Adobe Flash Flash plugin has crashed.
I hate Flash so much with a passion.
Yeah, so do I. But
unfortunately, we use Flash, and all radio stations use Flash because there isn't much of an alternative. I'm stuck with Flash because we use third-party providers to rebroadcast our stream. Ustream, and we used to use Justin TV till they folded, and Bit Gravity and Flowsoft, and they all have traditionally streams that you need a Flash player to play. Now, the future is something called HLS, which is just basically HTTP streaming, and it works quite well. I've been very happy with HLS, but you need to have a browser that supports HTML5 video streaming. Generally speaking, you're on a Windows machine?
Yes, it happens both on Windows 7 and a Windows 8 machine,
yeah.
And I primarily use Firefox.
My recommendation, first of all, I wish we could get rid of Flash. Apple's done their darndest to get rid of it, and most mobile devices no longer support Flash. Adobe even killed their mobile version of Flash, and that's a good thing. I wish it were dead on the desktop. It's not yet. What I recommend people do is use Chrome when they want Flash, because at least one of the things Google does with Chrome is Flash is built into it. They keep it up to date. It's isolated, so if a tab crashes, the browser doesn't crash. So I understand why you use Firefox, and I love Firefox, and there's nothing wrong with it. But when it comes to playing back Flash, I think Chrome is the most reliable. The other thing you could do is uninstall Flash and reinstall. It sounds like you've got a corrupted Flash. Have you been updating it regularly?
Yes. Yes, and in fact, that's about all I can find via Google is
Chrome is
saying,
Chrome
use the most updated version.
Yeah, try Chrome. Try Chrome and see if that works better. Everybody wants to abandon Flash and start using in-browser video playback. The problem is no one can agree on what the standard should be. Google has its own standard called VP5, I think, that they want to use, and MPEG-4, the MPEG-4 consortium says, well, we don't want to use, and so it's just a mess. And Flash wins mostly by default because the others can't agree. But I feel like Flash is gone in the next few years anyway.
How far away are we from HLS?
We have an HLS stream increasingly. If you, for instance, go to youtube.com/HTML5, HTML and the number 5, you'll have the option there to stop using Flash and YouTube and start using HTML5 streaming. And in fact, on your YouTube videos, that will probably work better. The problem with Flash is it's big, it's bloated, it's fat, it crashes a lot, and it's a massive security problem because it's become a vector of attack for malware, and Adobe has really struggled to keep it up to date. So, gosh, I can't wait to get rid of Flash.
So this is a fairly common problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would try Chrome and see if you get a better result. And, you know, radio stations use Flash because they want to show you ads. There's a variety of reasons. We use it because that's what everybody needs. I would love to move us away from it, but.
Hey, another quick question.
Sure.
A second.
Sure.
On my Windows 8 machine, if I try to upload a file early in the morning.
Oh, we're going to have to break because we got to go because it's a top of the hour break. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to take... Don't hang up. Don't hang up. I had to break because of the network, but go ahead and... you're saying Windows 8?
Hey, let's face it.
Windows 8, I shut the machine down at night, so when I turn on it to start the business day, if I try to upload a file to my email client, or if I try to upload a file via Firefox to someone I'm trying to send the file to, it'll crash the email file. That is the email client.
You got a mess on your hands. I'm wondering now if the systems don't have some other problems associated with it.
It'll crash the Firefox browser.
Yeah.
Because once. When I reload the email client, when I reload the browser.
Then it's fine.
Then it's fine.
These are related, I think. Sounds like Fire. Now, first of all, make sure you're using the latest Firefox. You might try uninstalling and reinstalling it, or starting Firefox in safe mode to see if that's better. You might have a browser plug-in that's causing a problem. You might have something in your cache, so clear the cache and history on Firefox. These are related. What's happening is the JavaScript is crashing the Firefox now, not Flash. But it's the same kind of thing. Both your Firefox is very fragile. And so there's a lot of JavaScript in these email interfaces.
I see.
And so it's running a program. In fact, Gmail was the first very commonly used web app when it came out. It's really a web app. It looks like it's a browser page, but in fact, there's a ton of script running to generate the page. And what's happening is that's crashing your Firefox.
I see, because Gmail's always worked well for me.
Yeah, oh yeah, me too. So look at the other thing to do, and I found I had a Gmail Labs thing turned on in my Gmail extension that was causing page rendering issues in Chrome, and I turned it off, and now my Gmail works much better. So that's another thing to look at, is make sure go to the Gmail settings and go to Labs, and it seems like they've turned on some Labs by default. Turn off any Labs that you don't need and don't use. Those lab experiments, I think, can be a little bit janky. But basically what's happening is you've got a problem with JavaScript crashing your browser and Flash crashing your browser. It sounds like a memory issue. And Firefox older versions particularly were notoriously bad with memory. You do have the latest one?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 32, I think.
Yep, I think that sounds right. Try Chrome. You know, I think you might.
Yeah, I use Chrome 3201. I use Chrome a lot, but there are just things in Firefox that I understand. Like better.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, it's a browser preference, and I understand that completely. But it's in this case, it sounds like Firefox is having some sort of odd difficulty with.
32 just arrived yesterday, I think, and. But I noticed...
Did this start with 32?
3201.
So it just started?
I started to download on my other machine yesterday, I believe, on my Windows 7 machine.
I'm wondering if there's a particular problem with this new version. I'm downloading it right now to try it.
Yeah.
All right. That's the best I could say. You know, it sounds like Firefox has something going on. You might look at extensions, disable them, use it in safe mode, see if that's better.
So you're driving all the way to San Jose for this game?
We're taking the bus, yeah, and leaving in 15 minutes.
That's going to take you a while. Right?
That's why it's leaving. The bus leaves at 1:45 for a 5:35 start.
I guess.
They're planning on traffic. Don't even ask how long it's going to take to get home. It'll probably take 6 hours to get home.
I lived in San Francisco for years, and I'm an old, old Candlestick, you know.
I loved Candlestick. I had 16 quad of Candlestick on my Giants hat, you know, going all the way around.
If you ever went to a night game at Candlestick...
Oh, you deserved it.
You know, they used to give out pins.
That's what I'm saying, the quad of Candlestick. Those are the pins. They had the SF with little icicles dripping off.
But you had to...
You had to stay all nine innings.
You had to get through an extra inning game to get...
Oh, yeah, no, I had a hat. I'm so sad I lost it, but it was a Giants hat with quad a Candlestick all the way around it.
There you go.
That shows you're a real fan. If I still had that. Hey, it's good to talk to you. I'm sorry I can't be of more help, but there's some ideas anyway, Roy.
Thanks very much for watching.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Take care. Our show today brought to you by my friends at Citrix, who do a great program for anybody in business called Citrix ShareFile. I use it all the time, every week. See, every week I have to send files, large files, and this is true in almost any business, large files. In my case, I'm sending audio files to the radio stations on our Tech Guy network, you know, ads and stuff. And they're big. So, you know, some of these files are 10, 20, 30 megabytes. Sending files through email, and that's what I think probably a lot of you are doing in your business, bad for a couple of things. The size is one, of course, because... Nowadays, you send a large file like that, it could bounce back, probably will bounce back. Most mailboxes will not accept giant files. Citrix ShareFile has virtually no limit. I think the top file size is like 10 gigabytes. It's huge. There's also the issue of security. First of all, I say it all the time, do not send email attachments. Email attachments are the number one way viruses spread. So I tell people don't open email attachments, but that means if they're not going to open it, you better not send it. And then, of course, it's not secure. So if you're an attorney or in medicine, sending any data through the email is like sending a postcard. Anybody along the way can read it. It's not private. Citrix ShareFile solves these problems because you're not sending an attachment. You're sending a secure link. Your Citrix account gives you a page. Their Citrix ShareFile account gives you a page with your branding on it. When they get that link, they click it in their email. It goes to a secure site, big download button. It's very easy for them to use. They don't have to sign up for anything. They don't have to have an account with anybody. They just get the file. You can even request files. So if you're an attorney and you're asking your clients for pictures or other documentation, you can send them an email that says, please upload this file here. It makes it very easy for them. ShareFile is a business solution that allows you to exchange files quickly, securely. Those files are always available. I sync on my desktop, so those files are always available. Many of the time I go home, I forget to send the file out, but I can then launch ShareFile on my mobile or at home on my desktop and send that file because it's on the ShareFile servers. It's really great. I want you to try it free for 30 days. No obligation. Just visit ShareFile.com. Do me a favor, though. It's a little strange. There's a bunch of places you can get a trial offer, but at the top it says podcast listeners. Click here. Would you do me a favor? Click that microphone at the top of the homepage and then use the offer code TECHGUY. One word, TECHGUY. No space. And 30 days free. Do fill in the thing that says what industry you're in because they'll customize it for your industry. ShareFile.com. Click the microphone at the top of the page. Use my name, Leo. You'll love it. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Hour number three of the Tech Guy program, 8888. Ask Leo if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you can help any of our callers today. We had callers with all sorts of interesting issues, and I'm not sure how helpful I have been. But if you think you've got an idea, call or visit the website, techguylabs.com, and put your thoughts there in our comments. Albert from Moreno Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Albert.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so I'm thinking about buying the iPad Air, but I don't think I really know much about it. Can you
wait a month? Because I think Apple's going to announce new iPads in October. They usually do.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if that makes a difference or not. I don't know what you could do to the iPad Air to make it super-duper better. One thing almost certainly they'll do is add the fingerprint reader to it. I don't know if you care about that. And they're not going to, you know, they may make a bigger iPad. The rumor is there'll be a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. If that were something you'd be interested in, you'd be worth waiting. The other reason to wait is when they announce the new ones, the old ones drop in price.
Right. Well, yeah, I was thinking then that sounds like a better option is just to wait for the new one to come out. But I'm basically trying to use it, and I know I hear people say don't use it to replace your laptop. You can't.
That's not strictly true. It just depends what you do with a laptop.
Okay. So basically I'm a grad student, and I just...
I wouldn't want to write a paper on an iPad.
Yeah.
But you can. You certainly would want to get an external keyboard. It will use any Bluetooth keyboard, including Apple's own. They also, a number of companies, including Logitech, make cases that are keyboards and stands. So it looks like a little laptop, kind of. The iPad sits in a little crevice on the keyboard, and it's held upright, and you type on it. And certainly, if you're going to write a paper, you're going to need a real keyboard. You don't want to tap on glass to write a paper.
Right, yeah. I have one of those Bluetooth keyboards.
Yeah, that would work perfectly.
I have that.
Now, here's the disadvantage. One of the things I do when I write a paper... or I would do if I had to write papers, is I would have the word processor in my text in one window, and I might have a browser or reference materials in the other window. And there's no windowing on an iPad. So when you're typing that paper, that iPad is dedicated to the word processor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a disadvantage or not. It depends how you work.
Well, it's fine with me because usually I like to print everything out and have it on paper.
Yeah.
And then whatever I have on my... in my documents on my iPad. I don't know if they have Microsoft Word.
They do.
Applications for...
They have Word. Microsoft, ironically, released Microsoft Office for the iPad before they released a touch version of Office for their own Surface.
Oh, interesting.
So, Excel, PowerPoint, Word, all available. They're not exactly the same as the desktop versions, but... Mm-hmm. They're getting there. They're pretty capable, and you'll certainly be able to use them immediately. Apple also ships the iPad with its own Office suite, Pages, which is their word processor, which I happen to like better than Word, but that's a you know, it's a preference. It's not a technical difference. They also have Keynote, which I think is a better slideshow presenter than PowerPoint, mostly because it's less used and people are sick of the PowerPoint look. And Numbers, which is their version of Excel, that comes with the iPad. So you've got that for free.
Well, I had to pay for that when I got the iPad 2.
No, I know. They changed that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the thing.
Well, you already own it, so it doesn't matter to you, but they did change that. It now comes with it.
Yeah, I mean, with the iPad, too, it's just kind of running slow and, you know, the...
Oh, yeah. That's your they're currently at the fourth generation. The next one's, you know, the iPad Air is a... is it fourth or fifth generation? So you're a few generations back. The other thing that slowed it down was iOS 7. I don't know if you put that on your iPad too, but that would...
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, no wonder it's slow. Yeah. So you'd see a big improvement. These new processors are much faster. And that's by the way, another thing that would happen in October with the new iPad is they would put the new A8 processor in it. And these Apple processors are very fast, 64-bit. They're really desktop-class processors.
Okay. So here's the thing. And I was thinking about just getting 128 gigs so that I have all of as much memory as I possibly can.
I mean, if I'll be honest with you. It's a bit of a stretch to use the iPad as a laptop. My mom uses the iPad because all she does with a computer is email and surf and play games. iPad's great for that. Writing research papers as a grad student, you might want to look at the do you like Windows?
It's okay. I'm not really hip to the Windows 8. I have the Windows 7.
A lot of people, a lot of people think that the Surface Pro 3 is a pretty nice little kind of hybrid tablet laptop experience. You could take the keyboard off, and now it's just a tablet. Very nice screen on the Surface Pro 3. And then, of course, there's the MacBook Air, which is, more expensive, but a real computer. It really has to do with your comfort level with writing papers on that size screen, not having multiple windows, that kind of thing.
I can do it. Yeah, I can do that. That's not really the issue. The issue is just saving everything and then backing it up. And so I figured...
This is the beauty of the iPad is it's automatically backed up. The iCloud, you just turn on iCloud backup. It's all there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you need 128 gigs because word processing documents are not big. The big storage is more for movies and TV shows. Maybe if you had a ton of music. I use a 64 gig iPad and haven't even come close to filling it up.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if you need 128 gigs. It's hard to say. This would be your first iPad? Oh, no, you said you had an iPad 2.
Yeah.
Well, how much have you used on the iPad 2?
Quite a bit, actually, because I have more things on there than just, my documents.
Some apps are huge, What are you studying?
Clinical psychology.
Okay, so there might, I don't know, but, some of the textbooks may be available on the iPad. Those might take up a lot of space.
Yeah, that's part of what it is. It's a Kindle reader and stuff
They
like
can
that.
Be gigantic because they have images in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of tables, graphs, stuff like that.
It's funny how big, of all the things, the textbooks tend to be some of the largest files on your iPad, oddly enough.
Yeah. That's why I figured I'd get that.
I like having multiple screens, but if that's not an issue for you, and for some people, a lot of writers, it's not. They want one screen because they don't want to be distracted. And
right,
so that might be a perfect thing. It's a little small, and then you might want to look, if they do, in fact, release a bigger one in the fall, you might want to look at the 12.9-inch. We don't know. That's a pure rumor. But I think if Apple does, and one of the reasons this rumor has some traction is Apple may be trying to release an iPad that is more for somebody like you, more something you can work with. There is also a rumor based on information gleaned from the early release editions of iOS 8 that they will start to add multi-window capability, something like Samsung does now with its tablets. And that might solve some of the issues that people have of using it as a work device. Apple wants you to use an iPad as a laptop. I think there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. I actually like it better than that Samsung Galaxy Tab that I had. That thing just crashed on me completely and the battery life was...
For tablets, the iPad is the creme de la creme.
Okay.
It's the top of the line. There's nothing better. It really is good, but it's not maybe as functional. There's no stylus. It doesn't have windowing yet. I suspect it will next month. I think in iOS 8 it will have windowing. But you won't want to run iOS 8 on your iPad second generation. You need to get a new one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, the thing is that budget was the biggest thing. I didn't want to have to buy a whole other laptop again, and then.
It's like less expensive. Although, if you put 128 gigs in it and LTE, it's going to be roughly the same as a MacBook Air, the low end MacBook Air. You're going to get close to $1,000. At that point, you might be better off with an Air. I can't look. These are things I can't decide for you. I can tell you about the tech specs, but you have to use it and get a sense of whether it's something you want to use. Now, somebody in the chat room saying, Scooter X says he uses iOS 8 on a second generation iPad and it runs fine. I would not want to do that. At my experience with Apple, yes, they will let you do it. Apparently, it's only the first generation iPad you can't upgrade. But boy, and the other thing that's going to be a big difference for you is you're going to go to a Retina display from 1024 by 768 to twice that, and that's going to look a lot better. Good luck. It's a tough, you know, nowadays, I got to say this, technology is so good that it's now mostly personal choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay. That concludes this broadcast day. Screw the Niners. I'm going to do more calls. Who do we? I don't need no stinking football game. I'll just take a helicopter down after the show. I don't want to miss a minute of this fine tech guy show. So here we go with... I see somebody already
Cordell.
Picked up. So I should go to Cordell?
Cordell.
Hi, Cordell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy from Asheville, North Carolina. How are you, Cordell?
Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Just a second.
Oh. Can you hear me? Let me hang up on you. Oh, no. Okay. Go ahead. Yes.
No, I had a headset. I was busy mowing the lawn.
Oh. Well, I'm glad you stopped before I picked up on you. You know, we had a guy drumming yesterday. That was wild. Yeah, we picked him up, and it sounded like there was explosions going on. Anyway, I'm glad you weren't lawn mowing. What can I do for you, Cordell?
Well, first, I'd like to take a second and thank you and everyone in front of and behind the camera at Twit for doing what you do.
Oh, I thank you. We have a phenomenal group of people here, and probably people who listen to the radio show. Anybody who listens to a radio show know there's more people than just me. There's a whole bunch of people. Starting with Heather Hammond and Kim Schaffer, who's our call screener today, and of course Nathan Staten, who's our musical director, but he runs all the technical stuff back in Sherman Oaks and the Network Operations Center, and of course here at the Brick House where the Tech Guy Labs are, we've got a bunch of technicians here too. So, and then we make podcasts and stuff. So yeah, about 20 people here at the studio to do this show. So thank you. On their behalf, I'll give each and every one of them a nickel raise, just for you.
All right. So my question is, or let me preface this, I just got a Samsung Galaxy S5 first smartphone.
Yeah.
And I want to know if Google Wallet is safe for me to use.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about Apple's announcement this week. The Apple Pay, which is their version of Google Wallet. These are very similar ideas. Apple on its iPhone has a program called Passbook. Up to now, it's been out for a couple of years. All you've been able to do is put airline tickets and affinity cards, you know, your Safeway club card, stuff like that in there. But starting next month, it's not available now. Even when the phone comes out, it won't be available. It won't be available until October. But starting in October, some mysterious time in October, Apple Pay will be turned on, and you'll be able to put your credit cards in there. Now, the Google Wallet is a little different because what you have to do is go online at Google and give it a credit card number. That funds it. The Apple Wallet will actually hold real credit card, in effect, real credit cards. You take a picture with your iPhone of the credit card. That number gets entered in. They contract with the bank. They do some magic. And now you can use your iPhone to pay by tapping. Google Wallet is, you know, can do that, but is more like, say, what iTunes does on the iPhone, where they've already got your information. And when you want to buy something, you just click Google Wallet and it goes through. It's absolutely as safe to use as iTunes. It's absolutely safe. I had a little problem with it.
That's what I was.
You saw that. You saw, yeah. So, and this is one thing that you should understand about wallets. They're not credit cards. They're funded by a credit card, but they're not a credit card. So the rules credit card issuers have to adhere to are different, I think. So, for instance, I had a weird charge on my Google Wallet. Every month I was getting charged $10 by a book club. And I didn't order it. I don't know what it was. And so I contacted the Google Wallet folks, and they said, well, we can't do anything for you. Now, if it were a credit card, they'd say, oh, we'll stop that payment. It's not authorized. Fine. We'll stop that payment. Would you like us to issue a new credit card with a new number? But it isn't a credit card. So they said, no, I can't help you. You have to go to the book club and say, stop it. I did. The book club had no idea who I was. They said, we can't stop it. Here's what the book club told me, which was weird. Create a new account, a second account. And then we can tell from that account what the old account was. Otherwise, we can't find it. And I resisted this for a while because I thought, I don't want to create a second account. I'm already getting one bill a month. Do I want another one? But I thought, all right, well, I'm gonna give them a chance. So I did. They immediately canceled the first account. And they said, yeah, aha, we found this other account. And it was created by this email address. And it's not mine. It's somebody, I don't know if they got my, I think they must have gotten my credit card number. So I called them, I'll call the MasterCard people and immediately canceled that credit card. Because Google Wallet does, you can get a credit card, but it's more like a debit card. You fund it. It's a weird system. Bottom line.
The main thing that I was wanting to do is be able to use tap to pay and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm not wanting to have services like.
Well, when you use, like when you buy Android something on the Android store, it's easier to use a Google Wallet than have to enter a credit card, right? So that's Google Wallet. I have Google's music service that's $10 a month. That gets billed to Google Wallet. So it's just an easy, it's just like iTunes in that sense. It's an easy way to pay Google for stuff like that. Tap to pay is another matter, and there aren't very many places you can use tap to pay. And the way the Google Wallet works is not as secure as the Apple Wallet. You enter a PIN number. It's also not as convenient. You enter a PIN number. The Apple Pay will use the fingerprint reader on the iPhone 6 to authenticate, which should make it more secure.
Yeah, I wish it did that on the Galaxy.
Yeah, the Galaxy has a fingerprint reader. The problem is their fingerprint reader isn't, on the S5 isn't really all that good. It's kind of funky. Is that what you use?
I use it. I haven't had any problems with it. I love it.
It works fine. It's reliable for you?
Yeah.
All right. I only used it for a week, so maybe I just had an unfortunate experience. So that's good news. So the fingerprint reader, I think all phones will at some point have these. They're inexpensive to add, and it does give you this additional authentication that's great, better than a driver's license. Even if somebody steals your phone, they can't use it to pay for stuff unless they steal your finger.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing for anyone with the Samsung Galaxy, if they're having problems with the fingerprint and they want to use it, you get three scans that it references. What I did is I scanned my thumb multiple times in different angles for each one of those
options. That's the same thing with the iPhone. That's the little secret tip with the iPhone. It's called overtraining. You can use the same finger and just give it lots of different positions because, you know, straight on is different than sideways, of course, on a fingerprint reader.
Yeah.
So the more you overtrain it. With your iPhone, you can overtrain your iPhone. What they do is they make it easy at first, right? Just scan it, whatever it is, five times, and then it'll work. But it's much better if you go back in, and you can if you go back into the Touch ID interface.
Yeah,
you could say, train some more. And so so on the Samsung, there's a way to train some more.
Yeah, you get, I think it's three, like you could have three fingers, but it's, I just use
just use one finger and use all three fingers for that one finger. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
There may be, I don't know on the Samsung, in the Apple thing, you can still have five fingers. You can say to any one of those five, overtrain that one, and you can continue to tap it again and again and again and again. And I am told that makes it much more reliable. So
I don't know if the Galaxy can do that, but I didn't look.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to do it. Take all of these three slots and do it. Hey, thank you so much for the call. It's good to talk to you. Thanks to you, all my employees are going to get a nickel extra in their pay packet. That'll make it $1.55. So, enjoy. More of your calls to come as we continue to answer your questions on the Tech Guy program. Website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go if you want to get more information about the things I mentioned, get links to all the products and so forth. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte here. I am
the Tech Guy.
Ron on the line from Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. This is my third time actually getting through to you. I'm a lucky guy.
You are, because, you know, people complain all the time. I can never get in because, you know, we only have six lines and there's like a million people listening. But you must have magic fingers.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Must be the long distance thing.
Maybe. Has winter come to Anchorage yet?
Yeah, it's cold and rainy. We had a good sunny day last week. It was really nice. I was outside working. It was great. And then it's been rainy and cold in the last few days, but not too bad.
It's a beautiful city. I was up there on a cruise a couple of years ago, and I just really the landscape in Alaska is gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. It is. And where I live, it's weird. I live in the city, and last year I had bear poop behind my car. I never saw the bear, but
are you sure it was a bear?
It was bear poop.
All right, okay. And I'll take it for granted that you know the difference.
Yeah. Well, here's my deal.
Adventures in living. Yes, Ron.
Here's my deal. So I have a warning for everybody. OnePlus One. I've had my OnePlus One for a while now, and it's been broke for a month. The customer service is terrible.
Yeah,
so warning everybody.
That's good to know. Yeah,
it's a great phone. Oh my God, it's a great phone. So now I'm back to my Note 2 with no Wi-Fi.
So I use a OnePlus One as well. This is a Chinese company. They're doing a weird thing. They make a very nice kind of flagship phone, and they sell it for $300, $350 for the 64 gig memory version, which is really cheap. But you have to get an invitation or play a game so you have to know somebody who has one, who'll send you an invitation, or they have various contests from time to time. Some of them somewhat controversial. It's funny that, you should mention that, 'cause I was wondering what kind of customer service you were going to get. It is a Chinese company. The site looks very nice and it looks like they might have good customer service. So it broke and what happened? You contacted them and they said,
you can't contact them. There's no numbers. So you have to log in to their website, and you know everybody has you have a login if you buy a phone,
right?
And it's all done by email. Now here the problem is, since they're in China, they don't respond to you 3:30 in the morning. So when you're sleeping, they respond, and then they want to troubleshoot you one at a time. Oh, did you try the charger? Did you try the cable? Did you try the computer? Yes, I tried all that. Stop doing this. Stop sending me to tech support. Give me a phone or fix it or something.
I know that feeling.
So I was wondering,
but everybody does that. They're going to walk you through every possible scenario before they give you a return merchandise authorization. They're not going to just say, hey, send it to us.
But most people that have a OnePlus, it's not their first rodeo.
I understand, but some do. And, you know, the same thing happened to me when I bricked my Nokia. I had to jump through hoops of fire before they'd believe me that it was broken. They said, no, you can't brick a Nokia phone. You can't. It's not possible. And I said, but I did. No. And so I had to do all of that stuff. That's not unusual. Did you try escalating it up? Well, so they haven't. How does the latest one
I got was from. Was the other night, 3:30 in the morning, day before yesterday, and plug it into the computer because I don't get any LED or anything. So the scenario is I had 30%. I put it in my pocket. I looked at it. I had 30% battery. I put it in my pocket. The next time I pulled it out was like a 45 minutes later. The phone's totally dead. Nothing. So I'm thinking, well, maybe something happened and the flashlight was on and I ran the battery down. So I'll just wait till I go home. I went home and plugged it in and it does nothing. So for the last month, and I plugged it in every option. I have all kinds of chargers. I got chargers and plugs and connectors and wires everywhere, and it doesn't work on anything. No LED. And that's what I'm trying to tell
them. It's dead. At some point, they've got to say to you, okay, send it back. We'll send you a replacement. And how long has this been going on?
It's a month. It's a month now.
That's pretty terrible. I think part of this, understand, is you spent so little on the phone, and this is something people should keep in mind. You know, A lot of the price on some of this on these electronics is really prepaying for tech support. A call costs them $20-$30 right there, boom. And so if you spend a lot of time with them on tech support, you're eating all that profit. And when something is $350 for a phone that most manufacturers charge twice that, that's where you cut. You cut on customer service. You cut on support. Sad Dell. This is what happened to Dell. Dell used to have amazing customer service. They were famous for it, right from their headquarters in Round Rock. In fact, I remember going down and visiting their tech support center. It was amazing. But as pressure built to cut the price on computers, Dell did, and you got to keep profit margin in there somehow. So what did they cut? They cut support. You could pay for superior support, but the free support was pretty poor, and it is on most devices now. And that's, you know, when you buy a $700 iPhone, you get better support because the support's built in. It concerned me a little bit that this was a company in China. I thought, you know, I'm wondering what kind of support. So that's good to know. I appreciate the heads up. If you buy this phone, and it's certainly a desirable phone at a very, very, very aggressive price, maybe that's why it's so cheap. There's no support. It's a little disappointing. It really is. It's a great phone. Can't knock it for the phone itself, but if support's bad, that's a bad thing. Bob in Victorville, California, you're next. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I got a problem, but that's why people call.
Oh. Someday somebody's going to call me and say, my technology is working beautifully. I have no problems. Life is great. Thank you. Goodbye. It will be a short call. But
just called to say hey.
Just called to say hey.
I have either lost or misplaced my Hotmail password, and there's really not a lot of support. There are places.
Have you tried password 123?
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
No, I. when we get new passwords at work, that's what they do. That's one.
have you tried Monkey? Very popular.
Oh no.
Yeah, no, yeah. As far as I know, password recovery. So here's the deal. And Hotmail is a Microsoft company.
Yeah.
And when I sign up for the new Outlook mail, I've had a Hotmail account for years, so I just transferred it over to Outlook. One of the things they ask for is a phone number so they can text message you if you forget or lose your password.
Okay.
And everybody does this. Well, check and see if you've got a number on record. Everybody does this now, and it's my strong recommendation that if they offer that, you set it up. Gmail does the same thing. And the reason is if a bad guy gets into your account and changes your password, what are you going to do? You can't log into your account anymore. You need a backstop. That's why they do this, so that you can go and you can say, you know, click the forgot my password button that's right below the password, and then say, text me a replacement. If they have a phone number on record, they can do that. And the chances are the bad guy who broke into your account doesn't have your phone. You could change the password, lock that bad guy out. And it works just as well, of course, if you forget your password. With Google, it's, you know, and I would imagine it's the same with Hotmail. It's very hard, if you haven't done that, to get them to recover your password, because they don't want a bad guy to be able to pretend to be you. This is a very common form of social engineering or hacking, is to pretend to be you and say, I forgot my password. You know, we were not sure exactly how the iCloud hacks occurred. Poor Jennifer Lawrence and all the other celebrities whose naked pictures were stolen by people who I pray go to jail for a long, long time. But we think, and Apple implied, that it had something to do with the secret question system. Apple, like a lot of people, if you can't remember your password, you call them up and they say, okay, what are the answers to these secret questions? And you answer them. Problem is, if you're famous and the secret questions are trivial, like what high school did you go to, a bad guy can figure these out. So secret questions are a vulnerability. I think the best way to do it is this backup phone number. It's what Google does. I think it's what Outlook did. Go press, you know, press the button that says forgot my password and go through whatever hoops you have to recover it. Understand, they make it hard because they don't want bad guys to steal the password. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the Tech Guy Show for this weekend. I hate it. It goes by so fast. I'll be back next weekend. I hope you will, too. And remember, our website, Tech Guy Labs, is available to you free every day, Monday through Friday. I got an email from somebody the other day who said, I buy everything you talk about. And I got a little nervous. This person's a fairly famous person. And I got a little nervous thinking, what, you actually listen to what I say? But I try very hard when I recommend something to make sure it's something worthwhile. So I guess I will redouble my efforts to only recommend the good stuff. Hey, I'm so glad you got Aurelia back. We lost her yesterday. That's great. Aurelia, thank you so much. I pushed the wrong button.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
I apologize. So just to recap, because yesterday we were talking.
Facebook. Yes, we were talking about, instant messaging from Facebook, it comes on my phone and it eats my text messaging, you know, and I delete the app of
Aurelia, are you Italian?
Yes.
So it manja, it eats your... I made a delicious lasagna last night, Aurelia. I make my own pasta from scratch with a pasta machine. I make my own bolognese from scratch. What part of Italy are you from?
Well, my father is from Rome.
Roma. Wait a minute. You didn't grow up in Italy?
No.
How come you have an Italian accent?
Because... the Italian blood is run to my veins. That's all.
I should have talked like that too. I'm a gonna. So here's. No, I sound like Chico Marx. I apologize. All right. So this is. So I'm trying to understand what's happening here. And everybody, this was a real annoying thing Facebook did. They took the messenger out of the app, and now you have both, right? And you say that when I delete
the text messaging from my phone. From Facebook and also the Facebook app, I deleted it, and it still comes there. And I'm wondering if I can do something with it, to go to the Apple Store to do something or to change my phone number. I don't know.
So, all right. So you got an iPhone. You had the Facebook app. Facebook app said, install Facebook Messenger. You're a good person. You did it.
The new text messaging from Facebook, yes.
Wait a minute. You didn't grow up in Italy?
No, I didn't grow up, and I didn't grow up in America, because that's why I still have that sexy accent.
Ah, you got the sexy accent from some other country.
Right.
What country did you grow up in?
Okay, my mom is Romanian and my father is Italian.
That's why you sound like Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Well, Zsa Zsa Gabor is
Hungarian, but it's all kind of in the Anian.
Hungarian is Slavic country. It's totally different.
You're a gypsy. You're Roma. The people of Roma, the Romanies.
No. Gypsy is different.
I'm sorry. I'm just playing with you, Aurelia. You're good. You're a good sport, though. Thank you for being patient with my silliness.
Thank you.
I'm trying to understand what's happening here. You did install, did you or did you not install the Facebook Messenger program?
Okay, Leo. From the AT&T, I have only 200 text messages, okay?
So you wanted to use something else for messaging. That makes sense.
No. I have from AT&T. 200 text messaging.
Yeah.
But the Facebook got rid of all the text messaging on there, you know, instant messaging.
You don't have app? Oh, Apple Messages disappeared?
I deleted it.
You deleted it? You can't delete it. You're not allowed. So all you deleted was icon.
I deleted the app from Facebook.
Yeah.
On the text.
Okay,
you know that you have a text messaging there?
Yeah, Facebook Messenger. You deleted that.
Yeah, I deleted that plus the Facebook from my phone.
Good, you got nothing. But now you're not getting any text messages?
I do. That's the problem, because whatever comment I put in Facebook, to my phone.
So you're using up all your text messages. Now I understand.
Yes.
So you have to go in your Facebook settings.
Okay.
And turn off mobile notifications. So it's buried deep in the settings.
Okay. Leo, would you please have I'm already on Facebook. Whoa, where do I go?
Okay, let me open my Facebook. We have to walk through this because I don't
appreciate
it's
that.
It's crazy. Facebook is crazy. So you go to Facebook, and are you doing this on the phone or on your computer?
No, on a computer.
Good. You go to Facebook. And you go to the settings.
What is settings?
Okay, there's a little, on the right-hand side, there's a down, little down arrow triangle all the way on the right of the blue bar.
Oh, Okay, yes.
Yeah, you click settings. That and you go down to settings, and then you'll see a notifications button.
I don't have any. Oh, notifications.
On the left there, yeah. And then how you get notifications, and you'll see text messaging. Turn that off.
Text messaging.
See, it says text messages. Mine are turned off because I don't want to see them either. So you can...
Okay, it's off.
Yeah, no more messages.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, Aurelia, thank you.
Leo.
Yes.
I have another question, quick first question.
Okay.
I bought in the end of 2007 Apple laptop.
Yeah.
Now it starts to get hot. Especially when I go on that High Five Casino, the game.
Yeah.
On Facebook.
Yeah, because it's doing a lot of work. Yeah, that's flash. It's very, it's what we call processor intensive. It's making your...
Do I need to buy a new laptop?
Well, you said 2007?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't
it's
think you need to...
One.
I don't think you need to buy a two... is it so hot that you burn yourself when you touch it?
Yes.
Really? You can't touch it?
It gets my, because most of the time I keep on my lap and it gets my...
Okay. You can't put it in your lap or on a blanket, right? Because it's going to insulate the bottom.
I know. I don't have... I just put the edges of the laptop.
Yeah. Because you have to have air on the bottom. You have to have it float like a little... Like a little ravioli on your floating pillow.
Yeah, actually, I'm eating. I'm preparing some ravioli.
Oh, I love ravioli!
You are welcome.
I'm coming to your house, Aurelia. I'm going to fix the whole thing.
Hey, I live in Riverside.
You don't need to get a new one. Just make sure there's plenty of air circulating around it, Aurelia. 2007 is kind of old, but I don't. If it works for you, just remember that what's happened is that the software you're using 7 years later is taking more of its toll. It's making the processor work harder. The laptop will turn itself off if it gets too hot. To protect itself, it will turn itself off. If it starts doing that, then you might want to take it to the Apple Store. It might be that there's dust clogging the fan vents. And so it's not getting the cooling it should get. Make sure, though, you do all the updates because sometimes they update that to make the fan work better, things like that. Aurelia, manja, you're beautiful. You're bellissima. Thank you so much for being here. If I knew how to say that in Romanian, I would. Somebody in the chat, Remind of Ward, is recommending, and I think this is true, Aurelia, if it's still hot on the bottom, you can go and get, and we'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com, a little USB stand. Your computer sits on it. It's got fans in it. Plugs into a USB port. Those fans literally make about a 10-degree centigrade Celsius difference. That's a big difference. Enough so that it won't feel hot anymore. And so sometimes cooling it off just a little bit, it's like a little light breeze blowing on your computer's bottom. We'll keep it a little bit cool. Hey, we are out of time. Thank you so much. I hope you had a great day listening to the show. I thank you for being here. I'll be back next week. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for filling in for Heather Hammond this week. Nathan Staten, our musical director. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today, and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.